So this morning, I'm going to talk about libprefetch and reducing seek overhead with application-directed prefetching, which is joint work with Chris Frost and Eddie Kohler at UCLA. So as we all know, disk drives are slow. While over the past 30 years, seek times have decreased by 6.5 times, and throughput has increased 200 times, that doesn't compare to the nearly 3,000-time improvement in CPU performance that we've seen over the same period. To deal with this, developers and researchers have developed techniques to limit and optimize disk usage. Buffer caches and write batching avoids reading and writing the same blocks over and over. Disk scheduling tries to minimize seek distance, and read ahead overlaps disk requests with CPU time. So read ahead is an important part of the performance picture today. Many systems require it in order to provide throughput close to hardware capabilities. But because mispredicted accesses can have severe performance penalties, and because non-sequential workloads are hard to predict, read ahead typically only applies to sequential access patterns. Unfortunately, some workloads need to access data non-sequentially. For example, some scientific workloads, image processing, and some database queries. So why are non-sequential access patterns slower? Pretty much anyone can tell you it's because seek costs are high. We can't make disks faster. But one way to approach the problem is to avoid it by parallelizing the bottleneck. We could work around slow disks by using lots of memory to cache everything, or buy lots of disks to get acceptable performance. But there are data sets, some of you probably deal with them, where you can't afford to throw enough hardware at the problem. A solution that addresses the problem on a single disk could help even those that can afford lots of hardware. Disk scheduling can often reduce the number of expensive seeks, so why don't applications with non-sequential access patterns schedule their disk requests better? It turns out it can be tricky and painful to actually get right. As an example of what I mean, consider a program that needs to access a large non-sequential data set. Upon recognizing the problem, he might ask the kernel to prefetch the data that might solve his problem. Or it might make the application actually slower. Prefetching could evict another data set that is more critical to the application's performance, or maybe the data set is larger than what can be cached in memory, so by the time the last bit is prefetched, the first part has already been evicted, making the prefetch request pure overhead. In fact, we encountered this problem before we implemented a memory contention algorithm for libprefetch. Libprefetch addresses this problem. It's a user-space library that provides a new prefetching interface to applications. Applications inform libprefetch of their intended accesses, like previous application-directed prefetching systems. Then libprefetch manages the details of prefetching the data in a way that will improve performance. Some of our benchmarks of real applications run over 20 times faster with libprefetch. So the contributions of libprefetch work include the results of and interpretations of a set of microbenchmarks that quantitatively explore why non-sequential accesses are slow and techniques to speed them up. An interface that lets new as well as retrofitted applications easily inform libprefetch about their intended accesses. A few small but important kernel changes that enable user space to effectively manage prefetching, as well as a mechanism to share prefetching resources without explicit coordination. In the rest of this talk, I'll briefly discuss related work. Then I'll talk about some of the microbenchmarks that support our approach to prefetching. After that, I'll show how the libprefetch interface works. Then I'll present some performance improvements that we've seen using libprefetch. So a general technique that can speed up non-sequential accesses is prefetching. There are two parts to prefetching. In order to prefetch, an algorithm needs to know what data will be accessed. There are many techniques to figure that out, like analysis of historic runs or even speculative execution. Libprefetch uses application-directed prefetching, meaning it relies on the application to tell it what will be accessed, because applications can provide an access list that is accurate and stretches far into the future. The other part of prefetching is how to use that access information. Most research in this area involves changing buffer cache eviction policies or other more complicated changes to the memory system. In this area, libprefetch focuses on directly reducing I/O costs. There's a lot more related work in the paper, but the most relevant to the discussion today is the application-directed prefetching systems of TIP, developed by Patterson et al., and ACFS, developed by Cao et al. These systems found that applications do know their access patterns, and using it to prefetch can, in some cases, double performance. However, both of these systems were developed when a few megabytes of memory was a lot, so they both focus on fetching data just before it's needed by the application, because they are conscious of the fact that the application may prefer to use the memory as opposed to the prefetching system. A short example will make clear why traditional prefetching is no longer sufficient. So consider this access pattern. Without any kind of prefetching, the interleaving of CPU and I/O time might look something like this. The gold boxes are fixed in size and represent CPU time, and the blue boxes are proportional to seek distance. With a simple prefetching mechanism that only prefetches the next block, this access pattern will overlap most of the disk I/O with computation time. However, as I mentioned earlier, CPU speeds have increased much more than disk speeds. So today, you can easily end up in a situation like this, where I/O is overlapped as much as possible, but is still the dominant factor in runtime. So one question we tried to answer in our microbenchmarks is, what are the actual characteristics of seek performance? This graph shows the result of a microbenchmark that tries to answer that question. The log scale x-axis varies seek distance, both forward and reverse directions, and the y-axis is milliseconds per seek, lower being better. The test works by starting at one end of the disk and reading a page every seek distant amount, giving an average cost for a given seek distance across the entire surface of the disk. As we expected, seeking backward is slower than seeking forward, but the key observation in this graph is that it changes character around 1 megabyte. Above that point, there's a gradual increase in costs correlated to seek distance. So a 1 gigabyte seek is around the same cost as a 2 megabyte seek. However, if we can change a 2 megabyte seek into a 32 kilobyte seek, the cost savings will be substantial. With the same example access pattern, simply reordering requests reduces the number of seeks from 5 to 2 and the maximum seek distance from 6 to 1. This is the same effect that traditional disk scheduling tries to exploit. But we just can't arbitrarily reorder disk requests. The application plans to use the data in a specific order, and libprefetch must ensure that the appropriate page is in memory at the appropriate time. Any data that is retrieved before it is needed must be buffered until the application is ready to use it. Therefore, reordering is limited by buffer memory. If we look at the same kind of prefetching graph as before, we can see that with a reorder buffer size of 3, prefetching with reordering is faster than traditional prefetching, even with a fast CPU. And with a reorder buffer size of 6, it's even faster. But is there a point of diminishing return for the buffer size? What's the best buffer size to use? We ran another microbenchmark to find out. This test randomly accesses data from a 256 megabyte file. By randomly, I mean some blocks are accessed more than once, some not at all. Along the x-axis, we vary the reorder buffer size. The y-axis shows runtime for the test to complete, lower being better. As you can see, a small amount of reordering has little effect. Then in the gray region, the amount of reordering has a drastic effect. And then increasing the reorder buffer size again has a relatively small effect. To understand the shape of this graph better, we looked at the average seek distance for the resulting disk requests. The region where there's a drastic reduction in seek distance roughly corresponds to the region of the seek graph where it transitions between its two modes. So we will see a major improvement from reordering buffer sizes that push the average seek distance below 128 kilobytes, but is it worthwhile to use larger reorder buffers? Yes. A large reorder buffer can still have a major impact on performance, an additional 4.7 times in this experiment. So this benchmark suggests that we should use as much memory as possible for reordering when prefetching. You may notice some jaggedness in the zoomed-in graph. That's not measurement variation. Each step down corresponds to one fewer reorder groups, which means one fewer passes across the disk, and a corresponding decrease in total runtime. So the microbenchmark shows that the amount of buffer memory we can use greatly affects performance. Using less memory than possible would restrict the performance improvement, and using too much memory would evict useful data and cost time. Libprefetch starts out using all memory listed as free and as part of the buffer cache by the proc file system. Since memory usage is dynamic and varies in the system, libprefetch has to adjust the usable memory chain. I'll talk more about this mechanism in a little bit. The paper investigates some additional microbenchmarks, like the effect of request size and the speed difference between the start and end of the disk. One interesting result is that for some disks, it can be less expensive to read a small amount of extra data instead of seeking over it. But the two graphs I explained demonstrate the core opportunities we exploit in libprefetch. The prefetching algorithm in libprefetch motivated by the preceding micro benchmarks, uses application-directed prefetching and, as much as possible, memory to aggressively reorder requests. So what does the application interface look like? At a high level, applications need to supply their anticipated access lists to libprefetch. We do that by way of a simple list of accesses. If an application will access page 4, then page 5, then page 4 again, that's what it puts in its access list. The application may only know the access list up to a certain point, and libprefetch only needs the beginning of it to start with. So after receiving the initial portion of the access list, libprefetch will periodically call back into the application to retrieve more of it. The callback technique also makes it easier to retrofit existing applications. But an example is the easiest way to see how this interface works. So first, the application registered a callback function with libprefetch. Then it tells libprefetch about regions of the files that it wants to do prefetching in. This allows the application to not prefetch some data or use application-specific prefetching for some data. Next, it will tell libprefetch its initial access list. Each access entry includes a file descriptor and an offset in the file, as well as a marked flag, which I'll come back to in a moment. The request prefetching function takes a set of flags that let the application append to the current access list or clear it and start from scratch. And the return value of request prefetching indicates whether or not all of the access entries were accepted, or if libprefetch has enough data for now. Now libprefetch knows what the application is going to access and can prefetch it. As the application does its work, libprefetch intercepts read system calls in order to follow along in the access list. It also verifies that the prefetching data is still in memory with a new system call called fincore. If the application strays from the access list, then libprefetch will call back into the application to update the access list. The callback provides two location tuples, as well as an arbitrary pointer passed in from when the callback was registered. This information is useful to the application to determine its current location in its access list. One location tuple specifies the file and offset that trigger the callback. However, this file location may not be unique to the access list, or even in the section even unique in this section of the access list. So libprefetch lets the application mark entries that are most helpful for determining where they are in their access list. The other location tuple tells the callback the last marked entry that was accessed. In this way, marked entries can act as landmarks to callback functions. The application will use this information to query the application state and determine what the true access list is from this point forward. It will use the new access information to update the state in libprefetch, and libprefetch will then issue a phase of prefetchly, finally letting the intercepted read call complete. If the application accesses something that's not in a registered region, then libprefetch ignores it. And when the libprefetch no longer has sufficient information, it will call back into the application to update the access list. So having the application provide an access list instead of advice or commands means the application doesn't need to worry about the right time or the right order to provide that information. The callback interface decouples the prefetching mechanism from the core of the application. The callback function can probe into the application to figure out the access list, but calls into libprefetch aren't pervasively sprinkled throughout the code. Because the application will get a callback when it strays from the access list it told libprefetch about, the application developer will readily know when he's trying to prefetch the wrong information, making it easier to debug the use of libprefetch. So libprefetch is implemented mostly as a user space library. However, we made a couple kernel modifications that are important for the operation of libprefetch. Fincore, which I mentioned previously, lets the libprefetch detect when a page it expects to be in memory isn't. And the standard fadvise implementation ignores requests for data that are already in memory, even if the data is next on the memory system's eviction list. So we modified fadvise to always update the LRU position as if data had just been prefetched. Libprefetch uses fadvise to do its prefetching, but manages the logistics like when to prefetch, how much to prefetch, and doing things in the right order internally. Libprefetch aggressively uses memory and disk I/O. So we need to consider what impact it will have on the rest of the system. In terms of I/O, libprefetch is no different than other I/O-intensive applications, which Linux's disk scheduler already deals well enough. when considering how to deal with memory contention in libprefetch, we saw a similarity to TCP flow control. Like bandwidth, memory is a fixed quantity shared between multiple users with quickly changing demands. TCP uses an additive increase, multiplicative decrease control algorithm to get a fair share of bandwidth without oversubscribing the resource. We applied the same technique to libprefetch, decreasing memory use when pages are evicted from the buffer cache before they are used, and increasing memory use when a round of prefetching completes with everything in memory. As a result, libprefetch will share memory with other applications or other instances of libprefetch without explicit coordination. So we ran our benchmarks on a machine with these specs. One thing you might notice is that there's only half a gig of memory in this machine. The reason for that is so that we can run our benchmarks and their stock configuration on a relatively large data set in a reasonable amount of time. Our largest stock test takes 10 hours to run just once. We do believe, partially based on an analytical model, that speedup is largely a function of the ratio of buffer size to data set size. For example, a 2-gig data set run with 1 gig of memory might give a similar speedup as a 4-gig data set run with 2 gigs of memory. However, we haven't confirmed this yet. So how does it perform? The first benchmark exhibits an access pattern that we most expect libprefetch to help with. This benchmark submits the query select star from customer, order by zip, to a TPCC-like data set run by SQLite. SQLite, like MySQL, will fetch the data from disk in zip code order, resulting in effectively random disk accesses. In order to use libprefetch from SQLite, we only had to add about 500 lines of code. This graph and the next two show speedup, so higher is better. The x-axis varies data set size. For data sets smaller than memory, the speedup is constant at roughly 14 times. Yes, 14 times. It's constant because once each page has been read into memory, the rest of the query doesn't need to go to disk. As the data set gets a bit larger, cache effects wear off until libprefetch is 20 times faster than stock. I'll say that again. We sped up a real application by more than 20 times by reducing disk requests, or reordering disk requests. As the data set gets larger, note the log scale x-axis, speedup gradually declines. For the test furthest to the right, stock takes nearly 10 hours, whereas with libprefetch, it completes in 77 minutes. Our next benchmark has a strided access pattern. We benchmark the time for the GNU image manipulation program to blur a large image. When GIMP transforms an image, it often alternates between column major access and row major access, writing an updated copy at each stage. This results in a repeated large skips through the data set. Libprefetch should be able to combine the accesses from several rows or column traversals and eliminate many large seeks. The GIMP modification for libprefetch were 679 lines of code. This benchmark starts with no speedup because the entire data set fits in memory. GIMP stores several copies of an image as it processes it, so the data set is several times larger than the x-axis of the graph. Once GIMP must use the disk, libprefetch starts to help performance. The speedup peaks with an image size about twice the amount of memory, around 4x. By this point, all cache effects have worn off, and the benchmark is completely I/O bound. As the data set gets larger and larger, again, note the log scale x-axis, the improvement from libprefetch gradually declines. For the third benchmark, we use libprefetch to retrieve a file from disk sequentially. We don't expect the speedup because read-ahead should be able to max out the hardware, but we'd like libprefetch to do as well as read-ahead for this test. To our surprise, when a file has poor layout on disk, meaning that the partition might have been full when the file was allocated, libprefetch is able to improve performance over read-ahead alone. This speedup comes from the depth that libprefetch requests prefetching. Having many requests at once, the disk scheduler is able to overcome more of the non-sequential disk layout. For a file with sequential layout on disk, we see a slight performance penalty. But that penalty is mostly CPU time in libprefetch, which we haven't tried to optimize yet. We wanted to evaluate how well our memory contention controller works. So we ran 2 and 3 instances of GIMP and SQLite benchmarks concurrently. This graph shows the runtime of multiple instances normalized to the runtime of one instance of each test. GIMP with libprefetch scales slightly well than slightly less well than stock, but its absolute runtime is still much faster. SQLite with libprefetch, on the other hand, scales better than stock SQLite. It's not on this graph, but in both cases, if we disable the memory control algorithm, the benchmarks do not finish in a reasonable amount of time. We let them run for several times the stock runtime and then gave up and killed them. These two results say that our memory contention controller is necessary and effective. We were also curious about how well libprefetch interacted with other resource-intensive applications. This graph shows our GIMP benchmark run concurrently with two test programs. The first computes an MD5 sum of a large file, so it's I/O intensive. When we enable libprefetch in GIMP, both GIMP and MD5 sum complete much sooner. With more effective disk access, GIMP becomes less I/O bound, giving MD5 sum more disk time. The second test allocates a large chunk of memory and accesses each page in sequence for a fixed number of iterations. This ensures that all data stays in memory. A complementary effect occurs with this pair of applications. GIMP with libprefetch is less I/O bound, which means it has higher CPU utilization, competing with the memory application more directly. SQLite with this test had similar performance. So in conclusion, libprefetch knows how to prefetch non-sequential access patterns, so you don't have to. Using microbenchmarks, we confirmed the cause of poor performance for non-sequential access patterns, and libprefetch provides an interface that lets applications easily specify their access list and then handles the details of prefetching data without killing the performance of other applications. As a result, some workloads on real applications are more than 20 times faster. I'm happy to answer a few questions now.
Hi, I'm Jeff Kenning, Harvey Mudd College. I just have a simple one. I noticed in your sample code early on that you called pread rather than read. Do I actually have to go through and string replace all my read calls?
No, the pread was just for the example to show where the offsets in the access pattern were. We actually changed intercept pread, read, all the other variants.
Sweet, thanks.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. So as far as I can tell, all your workloads were run on a single disk. I know you had a variety of disks, which is good for the evaluation to know that it's resilient. But a lot of these types of workloads would be run on a RAID array, potentially a solid state disk, since they're becoming more readily available now. And it looks like there's kind of two effects. One is having explicit hints, okay, that allows you to know what to prefetch, which is going to give you some performance. But that performance effect seems to be amplified because you're working on a spinning platter disk. Do you have any results or maybe even some intuition about how much of this effect would survive if you were to run this on a disk that didn't have, that wasn't a spinning disk or a RAID array or something?
So basically your question is, what about SSDs?
No, not just SSDs, multiple disks and a RAID array where
okay.
a lot of these effects.
So you have two questions. Yeah. You have what about SSDs and what about RAID arrays?
Okay.
So that's how I interpret your question. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay, well, let's hear the answer.
Okay, so SSDs don't have the price capacity ratio that disks do these days. For a number of years, we're still going to be using disks. So this work can help in that time, at least. Mm-hmm. For RAID arrays, you do have a complication that you need to optimize across several platters. We haven't addressed that, but there has been previous work which pushed the layout of the RAID arrays up a layer in the stack so that you could potentially apply this technique if you had that information.
Okay, good answers. All I was saying was, if you were to run this in SSD, how much of the benefit would still survive? I'm not saying that disks are not relevant anymore. That's all.
It's hard to say. How much would survive a transition to SSDs. There are different access latencies for MLC versus SLC, so we may be able to achieve some benefit there.
Hi, Saurabh Bakshi from Purdue University. So your design was informed by this microbenchmark result that you showed on the nonlinear relation between the seek time and the seek distance. Can you comment on the generality of that result across different kinds of disk vendors or disk technologies? And maybe what the physical reason behind that is?
We did have a fairly limited set of disks to run this benchmark on, but we also see the same kind of results in previous work, which suggests that it's quite widespread. The second part of your question was?
What's the physical reason behind that nonlinear relationship?
Well, in the paper, we look at this problem a little bit. If you look at the maximum throughput read performance on the same graph, you'll see that the lines basically match up. So in that first region where it's much faster, you're basically only limited by the rotational latency. For the later region, you're actually seeing seeks, and that adds some fixed overhead, basically.
Thank you. All right, I had one other quick question, actually. You did this fairly simple SQL query, and I wondered if you looked at selective joins, right, where you actually end up accessing a much smaller percentage of the total amount of data, and how that worked.
We didn't look at any other queries, but if you know what the actual access pattern on disk looks like, then if it's fairly random, then libprefetch is probably going to be able to help if you can figure out what the access pattern is ahead of time.
All right, let's thank the speaker.